supporting you in your dog parenting journey. The Dynamic Dog Owner with Debbie Potter. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dynamic Dog Owner. Today we have a guest, Jay Horikzak, who is a canine masseuse and musculoskeletal therapist and chiropractor. So she is going to be telling us a little bit about what she does and how it can benefit dogs, even if we don't think our dog needs it. So hello and welcome, Jay.
Hello. Good to be here.
It's very exciting. So firstly, tell us a little bit about you, because not everybody will have come across you before or have heard about you before. So tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Okay, so I'm one of those kids that always wanted a million dogs and wanted to work with dogs and wanted to be a vet. You know, there's quite a few of us out there and kids currently, I'm sure. And so I toddled myself off to university and did a degree in zoology or animal sciences because I couldn't do maths at school. So my aim was that I'd get that degree and then go and be a vet. But I couldn't then afford to do a second degree. So from that point, my world all had to change and all my little plans. And I went down the route of dog training. So that's where I got into dogs in the first place. So I worked with a local dog trainer whilst I was doing my degree. And I also got a job working with people with disabilities as a support worker. Long story short, that led me to working at Hearing Dogs for Deaf People, a national assistance dog charity. And through the years of training dogs there, and also my other specialism is in gun dog, basic gun dogs, working gun dogs, not at competition, like high competition level. But I started to notice that many of the dogs I was seeing would be just their behaviour some days would be odd, like not the kind of behaviour you think, oh, I'm going to have to get a behaviourist in. It's just they weren't focused, or they seemed to not remember things that they'd been really good at the day before. And although there are so many reasons for that, as you know yourself as a dog trainer, one of the things I thought that may be relevant that was I felt often overlooked was not being very comfortable. So pain, discomfort, perhaps they'd had a really busy day and their muscles ached. I also have a condition myself that affects my muscles and my joints, amongst other things. And so I was very aware of how difficult it is to focus and how irritable you can get when you're having sort of a bad pain day. So about 6 years ago, I started to look into, how can I help the dogs that are in pain? So it led me to do my massage course in dogs and horses, and off the back of that, I then decided to train as a McTimony animal chiropractor, and now that's one of my little side hustles. Is I'm a therapist, a McTimony practitioner for animals, and I love it. I definitely think that it's the missing link that I was looking for a little while ago.
Amazing. That's really, really interesting of how your journey has sort of evolved over time. And in a way, kind of done a full circle that you wanted to get into veterinary to obviously help dogs. And now you're helping them, not in a veterinary capacity, but in a similar health capacity.
Health type. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what kind of so what kind of training do you have to do to become a massage therapist for dogs and a McTimony therapist? What do you have to do? Does it take a long time?
It should. So I think because a lot of it should be about taking your time and getting the experience. But if you're just wanting to be able to help your own dog, you can go and do many sort of weekend courses. There's online courses for massage therapists. But from the massage point of view, the Canine Massage Guild is great. There's some other really good organisations that do longer courses where you have to have training, in-person training, theory behind it, and go and spend time in practice with other qualified people. I think a sad thing, and you'll know this with the dog training industry as well, is that currently nothing is regulated.
So unfortunately, yes.
You have to be really careful, because you can find a therapist that's put a load of effort in and they understand the theory behind, like how the muscles work, exactly what muscles are going to contribute to other issues or be affected by different health conditions, and know which ones they should and shouldn't be working on, and the levels of work and the different techniques that are appropriate in different situations. And I also think if you're going to treat, let's keep it with dogs. If you're going to treat dogs, you should know dogs to an extent, because for your own safety, for the owner's safety, for the dog's safety, you need to know when to stop or change or move on. So if someone's interested in being a practitioner for others, I definitely recommend looking into the sort of the longer, really more robust courses. From a McTimony chiropractor, animal chiropractor point of view, I did a master's level, so I already have my bachelor's degree. So I did a full master's of science, but there is a course, a 4-year full-time course for anyone who's interested listening, with the McTimony College of Chiropractic, which is an integrated master's of veterinary chiropractic. So you don't get the master's of science, but you still have to do 4 years. You have to do a dissertation, not quite such a scary one. And you come out just as qualified at the end as a practitioner to be able to go and treat. But you don't have to have a degree first, because being that it's a longer course, they teach you all that background that you're expected to already have if you step in straight into the master's. So really anyone can do this now, mm-hmm. that there. So obviously what your background is will depend on which route you go. But if you're really interested in that, that's super. And at the moment, they are discussing regulation with the Royal College of Veterinary and DEFRA. And so in a few years' time, I expect that anyone who wants to be a veterinary physio, veterinary chiropractic or veterinary osteopath will have to be fully regulated, and therefore their course will have to have gone through a regulatory body to be approved. Most people do that anyway. Most of us are members of voluntary regulatory bodies, and we have to provide our CPD each year, because in an unregulated world, it gives people confidence that you are what you say you are.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that peace of mind, obviously, because it's the same as anything with your dog. You know, you want to make sure you put them in the right hands. And as you say, it's an unregulated industry for the whole part. So it's good that that's going to happen, hopefully soon.
Hopefully, at least. When for dog training, because I keep trying.
Sadly, yes, at least it will be for sort of the more sort of therapy side of it, so that's the positive. So do you think your background in working with dogs in a dog training capacity and at hearing dogs has helped you to be better at what you're currently doing now?
I would say absolutely, yes. So I draw a lot on my awareness of dogs, their behavior, just your animal husbandry, your manner with dogs. And also I've worked with people with dogs a lot. So, you know, the human owner is a huge part of the whole thing. You can't just ignore them and focus on the dog, because, well, first of all, they need to be involved in the treatment and holding their dog. But you need to keep them safe. You're responsible for their safety. But people are interested. They want to know what's going on and what's happening with their dog and why it might have happened and how they can help and prevent any other problems as much as possible. So having worked with dogs and people in the past, understanding dogs and dog people and all the different things that people do with dogs gives me an insight into, oh, what could that dog be doing that's actually affecting its body? Do you know what? I know how useful that is, because I also treat horses. And your average horse that's sort of a pet riding horse or a hacker doing basic schooling, I get that, because I used to do that myself with my own horse. But I had to do so much research when I was doing my degree into the competitive sports in horses, because I didn't know what was going on. So, and it's really vital to know, if your horse is out there jumping over a meter, that's going to affect it much more than a horse that doesn't ever go jumping. The effects on the body will be totally different. So knowing that in dogs, from having done these things and experienced them, it definitely helped me to be confident.
I suppose that's almost knowing sort of daily activities that think people do with their dogs, and then knowing the impact it can have. So you know the right questions to ask to kind of do that delving to work out what areas of their body are potentially needing a little bit more TLC.
Totally. That's exactly it.
That's interesting. Because I know, obviously, you don't have to have a dog background to do what you do. So it's nice to hear that you can do it, but you get a deeper knowledge because you've worked with dogs in the past.
So, yeah, I think every practitioner will have like a USP, won't they? So some
absolutely
some practitioners, and you know, they are out there competing with their own horses at a high level. They're the ones you're going to want. And similarly, I think my USP is dogs, because I've got the background in dogs and working dogs, and so that, and most of my practice is as a result in that. But that's, I think, the joy, the tapestry of life, is that people do the same things, but they are better in different niches within that, you know, thing. That's a really good word. Yeah, absolutely.
They put their own spin on it and their own personality and experiences into what they do. So a big question is it like going to a human chiropractor? Because I go to a chiropractor and I can't say it's an enjoyable experience, because it's quite, not painful, but uncomfortable. You know, you've, if anyone listening has been to a chiropractor before, you will know that you get a nice neck crack and you get pushed and pulled and poked and prodded and put in all different situations and weird positions to get the, you know, the releases of, you know, whatever they need to do to you. I'm assuming dogs don't tolerate that kind of chiropractor. How does it differ?
So there are two different sort of philosophies with chiropractic, in both humans and animals. And one philosophy does do a lot of moving of joints, and you get the cracking because they'll compress your joint when they're moving it and the air pops out. So it's not anything to do with the bones, although I know people feel that it is, and it sounds scary when it happens. That's just air popping out of the joints. That's known as diversified chiropractic. It's a technique, it's a style. And people do that with animals. And I'm sure anyone who Googles animal chiropractic or follows it on YouTube, and I get, you know, reels popping up all the time on Instagram or what have you, of a lot of people doing that with animals. I personally think that just scares me. Like, I look and think that dog's gonna bite, or just, you know, that because that's not what I do. So
and you've got the knowledge of the dogs to put into it.
Yes, but I'm no doubt there's lots of people that take themselves and their dogs to diversified chiropractors and think it's fabulous. So I'm not saying that that you shouldn't do that, but that's not what the method I do. So I don't, you know, use that or know an awful lot about that. So McTimony is another philosophy of chiropractic, and it's rather than stretching things, we put energy in. So our adjustments add a high energy maneuver, which essentially creates contraction in the muscles. It gives a kinetic force to then encourage relaxation and neutral position in all the joints. So we don't do any of that. We don't crack. There's no cracking. There's no moving. I go to McTimony Chiropractor myself, and it's exceptionally gentle. You lie on a bed, someone fluffs around, you feel these little things going on. I mean, maybe they move a leg a bit, what have you. And honestly, the first time I was like, I don't really feel that anything's happened to me. But then profoundly felt weird afterwards, because my body just felt odd. And I can honestly say, obviously I'm going to say this, I know people will see this and go, of course she's going to say that, but I can honestly say it made a huge difference to my mobility, and my comfort and pain level. I hasn't got rid of it, because I have, you know, my condition is genetic. It's not magic. McTimony isn't magic, but it has, as a way of managing the symptoms, it has made a really big difference. Alongside, I have sports massage therapy or physio. I think that's another thing that made me want to do it with the animals, because I'd felt how much it helped me. And it's the same with McTimony on dogs and horses, but let's talk about dogs. That occasionally an adjustment will feel weird. It's not painful, but you'll make a muscle that the dog isn't used to using, because it's been so tense for so long, will all of a sudden kind of wake up, and it will make them feel weird. It will potentially make sort of the nerves suddenly fire off and, you know, be tingly or what have you. And so sometimes there's like a reaction from a dog, or potentially, you know, it's a sore area and you don't realize, and you're palpating over it, and you quickly learn, oh, they're painful there because they don't like it. But because it's such a light touch and because I only use my hands, I'm able to respond to that and then not have to put them into situations that is uncomfortable and painful. So the majority of dogs tolerate it really well, probably don't even realize half the time anything's happening at the time. And there's definitely no yanking them around or stretching their neck sideways or clicking or cracking in the method that I use. So if people are nervous about that, then McTimmy is possibly the one that you'll feel more comfortable with anyway, because you don't have to listen to the cracks. Although on That's the other hand, people like the cracks.
I've learned something new today because I didn't realise the difference between the two different styles of chiropractic. And obviously I have one style, my dogs have the opposite.
Yes.
And I would quite like to avoid those cracks because they do sound very strange. You do wonder what on earth's happening.
I think everyone prefers something slightly different. So if being moved around and hearing the occasional pop is not for you, then I would obviously, again, I'm going to say this, have a look at human McTimmy chiropractors in the area and just go and try it out and see if you think it's as effective and better for you. And as I say, some people probably prefer the popping. I went to an osteopath once and the positions that I had to move into, and I remember once sort of all being folded up and he leant his whole body on me and I was like, I am never ever coming back here, because that was just so uncomfortable.
So obviously most people, I know obviously my dogs have treatment, so I fully get the benefits of having your dog see a therapist who can help them with these in these areas. For most people, they would probably look at, well, I know some people do look at me a bit bonkers when I say, oh yes, my dog has a chiropractor. They look at me like I'm a bit strange, because I think most people don't realize why a dog may need it and what the benefits are. So in, obviously I'm sure you see a multitude of different dogs and different animals for different reasons, but why does a dog benefit from actually coming to see you and having treatment?
Okay. I mean, I could talk about this in itself probably for an hour podcast.
Brilliant.
I'll try and show you. So firstly, just to say, I think a lot of it in dogs is because they're very stoic. And they're just, in general, most dogs are happy-go-lucky, live for the moment, love life animals. So that you don't necessarily realize, like a human will complain if they've got aches and pains. We understand that because we can speak human to each other. Dogs generally aren't like that, or it's subtle and it comes out in behavior, which is how I noticed it as a dog trainer, how I first started to consider it. As a side note, in horses, it's much more commonly understood. And most horse people, if you ask them, will say they have a back man or a back person, which is that some people have osteopaths, some people have chiropractors. I think that's because they have to ride them. So they feel if there's a problem or if there's a balance, they feel less comfortable riding them. There's potentially less performance, and that's a bigger thing in horses. So I think one of the reasons that it's seen as a bit odd in dogs is we don't know if they're feeling a bit iffy, combined with it doesn't really impact us unless you are competing with them. And I think, you know, if you look in the agility world, McTimmy is becoming much more known and used, or veterinary chiropractic is, because they do care about that extra second and that tighter turn and less likely to knock a jump over, because they are competing with those dogs. Show people are starting to use it more often because the animal will walk better and show better. But most people who own dogs, we don't think that way. We don't notice slight changes in performance, and we certainly don't know if they're feeling a bit uncomfortable or in pain or why that might be. And also, you go to the vets, and the vets, they're not magic. I think people put a lot of pressure on vets to know everything, and that, you know, that's not fair. They rely on their own, obviously a huge amount of training and fabulous skills and techniques, but also there's only so much that they can glean from an animal or from their, you know, diagnostic testing. So unless that animal is like genuinely pretty injured and having something that they can actually offer treatment for, they can't really help you either. And we are yet to be able to ask dogs how they feel and what's wrong.
Wouldn't it be easier if we could, hey?
Wouldn't it be? But I think, like, as you know, as a behaviourist and a dog trainer, there are subtle things that you learn to read and speak dog in that manner. And I found it's very similar with assessing an animal. So veterinary physiotherapists, veterinary chiropractors, veterinary osteopaths, whatever, you know, mode or method they use, a huge part of our training is in looking at how an animal moves, so assessing its gait and feeling its muscles, not feeling its muscles for major injuries. Obviously, you'd have to go to the vet if you think they've ruptured a tendon or a muscle or something. But we're talking about the subtle differences where we can take a bigger picture with what they've been doing, with the symptoms they've having, and look, say, oh, look, they're more balanced on one side, which they're probably favouring it. Maybe something happened here and now they've got a weird pattern of movement that's causing other problems. Just like with us, you know, I hurt my knee once and it was my upper back that was causing me problems because of referred pain and how I mm-hmm. changed my movement to compensate the obvious pain in my knee and caused myself an issue elsewhere. Dogs do exactly the same thing. So just life, normal day-to-day life, dogs generally, again, I'm generalizing, but most dogs, they're a bit gung-ho, aren't they? They run around, they jump, yeah. They leap, they play with each other, they bounce off each other. Some of them run into trees, mentioning no names, my dogs. They fall down holes, they leap off banks, they rough and tumble with one another, perhaps. Or they like to play with balls, they like to carry things in their mouth. Some of them like to play tug, they like to jump on sofas, running up and down stairs, all of those sorts of things. If they're slightly out of balance or move a bit funny or land a bit funny, can potentially over time, if they twinge something, not enough to go to a vet, you probably wouldn't even hear them yelp, but their body will compensate. And the body is fabulous. It will adjust and it will cope and the pain will go away. My dogs may all bark in a minute because the postman's just walked past the door. So watch this space. No, they're all asleep. They didn't notice him. That's great.
Yay.
So
that's always a win.
It's always a win. So, yeah, so that compensation over time, if there is something slightly more significant, the body, although it's marvellous, it reaches a point where it's like, oh, now I can't
do anymore.
Like, can't heal it anymore. I'm now in, like, I'm a bit out of balance and I can't actually do this. And from a chiropractic point of view, it's all about balancing that communication with the nervous system, which obviously runs everything. From movement to digestion to toileting to vision to everything. And all of that central nervous system is housed in their skull and their spine and their pelvis. And so if there's tension in the muscles that articulate that spine and the pelvis to the spine and the skull to the top of the spine, all of those areas obviously are controlled by muscles. If there's tension that ends up there, you can... I say the word compromise, but it's not, I'm not trying to be scary here. I mean, just ever so slightly, it reduces how well it's communicating. And what chiropractic does, it optimizes that. So it allows the body to be a better healing machine, I guess. And if the dog has got into weird chronic patterns of movement that are causing it some issues, we can balance everything out, treat some of the soft tissues that are struggling. And I can recommend ways, things, exercises you can do with the dogs to help them or refer. I mean, I love hydrotherapy. Absolutely love it. I think it's, if done well, it's probably my current favorite rehabilitation, or I say rehabilitation, but even just for slight things or to get fit in the first place. It's brilliant. And it goes hand in hand really nicely with the treatment that I give dogs. So, coming back to your initial point, having gone through all of that, I think that a lot of dogs just through daily life deal with the grind and the slight, well, I'm not comfortable. And keeping them comfortable and balanced prevents any issues that could happen in the future. So if you've got a dog that generally seems fine, it's a good maintenance preventative treatment in the same way that, you know, we do lots of preventative measures and spend a lot of money on that to prevent, you know, maybe that problem would never happen, but we're trying to make sure it will never happen, to make our dogs' lives as long, comfortable and pain-free as we possibly can.
And in a way, on the other hand, it's no different to your car.
No.
You know, you take your car for a service in an MOT and you might not realize there's a problem. Mm-hmm. They go, oh, this is running low, or that needs this. This needs a slight tweak to prevent you having a problem. Giving your dog treatment is kind of no different. You're just checking everything's working smoothly, no problems, and we can nip them in the bud before they become a bigger problem.
Absolutely. And it could, you know, even be cheaper. Like, obviously, it's an investment, but if you can prevent a dog getting a bigger injury that leads to something breaking or ruptured cruciate ligament, something along those lines, obviously that's much more expensive in the long run. And on the other side, as a support for rehabilitation, I don't think Timony by itself is everything you need to rehabilitate a dog after an injury, but I think it complements physiotherapy methods and hydrotherapy so well. It makes it 10 times more effective. I mean, I'm saying 10 times. There's no scientific study on the specific amount of times better, so please don't quote me on it. But I'm just using that technical term from my experience. It makes other rehab methods or modalities so much more effective because it puts the body in a really good place to then do those things more efficiently. And you can, I'm a member of regulatory body and my professional body, and so if, you know, insurance claims can go, I can put insurance claims through for my treatments. So it does complement if people are having rehab, and I've seen many dogs for rehab, and I think that's much more obvious because you can see the difference more easily. People feel it, they go away and they go, oh yes, I've noticed a difference now. Whereas when you're doing it for preventative, like with anything, you don't really see the difference. Perhaps you have a dog that's a bit more energetic, a bit more comfortable, if there are subtle signs. But in general, you're doing it to prevent issues in most cases. So you've got preventing issues for most cases. We've got, as a complementary rehabilitation method after, say, a cruciate repair or a big soft tissue injury, or, you know, many, many, many things, pretty much everything, it can support rehabilitation. And then the other method is, although I said it briefly before, is for improving performance. Because if the body's in balance and the communication is optimal, then those nerves are going to fire as quickly as they can, and they're going to move those legs as quickly as they can, and the dog will move faster. It will be able to reach further, stride longer, jump higher. And it's subtle. Again, you wouldn't necessarily notice it, but you'll see it if you're competing because your times will change that sort of thing. So it is, you know, I think it's really something that I'm quite passionate about now. I obviously treat a lot of gun dogs as well because we take them out and we work them hard. And traditionally, people don't, I don't think, use much complementary therapy at all in gun dogs. It's just not been a part of that world. Actually, they are battered often at the end of the season because they throw themselves into their work.
And they're quite enthusiastic breeds as well. They're not slow breeds.
Absolutely. No, so I know, and I practice what I preach. So I treat my dogs, and one of my dogs is currently going through a course of hydrotherapy as well. So, yeah, I treat one of my dogs. He had a minor injury. Again, you probably wouldn't really notice much. He had his Loxicon from the vet, and I did his prescription of rest, and he's come up sound. He's not lame anymore, but I can see that he's got quite a difference in his muscles, and I know that makes him more susceptible to get an injury because he's not moving properly and he's not using his muscles well. So he's now having a course of hydrotherapy to build those muscles up alongside the treatment I've given him, because I want him to be fit and healthy and work and not be injured again.
Likewise, as you know, my dogs have treatment, and for me, it's my eldest dog has always been an healthy dog, bless him, because he's just a big dog. He's got pretty poor genetics and he is quite susceptible to picking up injuries. He often gets lame on one leg. it was very subtle, but since having treatment, it's the small things that I've noticed, that he's now more comfortable jumping on the sofa. He doesn't get lame anymore. He now jumps back on my bed when he stopped doing that for a period of time. So it's those very small, subtle things that don't seem big, but it clearly shows he's in a lot less discomfort than he was. So what are the small things? So obviously you and I are probably a little bit more aware of what to look for. For people who've not considered this type of therapy or treatment before, are there any sort of common things that you can look out for in your pet when they're moving, when they're walking, that would highlight that there's a potential discomfort or misalignment that needs a little bit of treatment? What are the kind of things that people could look out for?
Okay, so firstly, I'm just going to say, if you notice anything big, like lameness or a sudden change in their behavior or ability to do something, I would always say go to your vet first, because you need to rule out anything more clinically significant that needs treatment and that would potentially I wouldn't want to treat anyway until that's dealt with. But the more subtle things would be exactly as you mentioned, like struggling to get on the bed, on the sofa, into the car, or equally off the bed, off the sofa, out of the car, because depending on which part of the body is affected will depend on whether it's pushing up or landing down that's the problem. So looking out for that, looking out for dogs just slowing down. So they're not lame, but, you know, and I don't mean naturally with age, because obviously dogs slow naturally with age, but that is because they're less strong as they get older. They probably are in some level of a little bit more discomfort than when they were younger. But if it's, you know, not a very, very slow gradual decrease with age and you just notice, oh, you know, my dog's not really running around as much, or it's tiring sooner, or it's not... yeah, I guess running around as much as what I'm thinking is, rather than going off and playing with other dogs, it's just sniffing more. Sometimes that's what we're after, because we're trying to calm the dog down. So, but it's more if it's happening out of that context and it's just, you know, you haven't been actively working towards and you're just observing. You can notice stiffness. So perhaps after exercise, they feel a little bit stiff. They appear a little bit stiff because they struggle to stand up as quickly as normal, getting out of their bed, for example. Or just they walk a bit more stiffly when they come to the end of a walk compared to at the beginning of the walk. Sometimes they will get up and have a few hops and then recover, because they've got quite stiff and sore and crampy when they're lying down, because the muscles just aren't recovering as well as they could be. You can notice change in their behavior. They just become a little bit less fizzy, perhaps a little bit more grumpy. Again, I would always check that out with the vet first, but should the vet say, no, I don't think there's anything for me to worry about, but you've noticed that symptom, then that's when I would say, okay, well, let's go and see if it's something more in the muscles, because they can't tell that. They don't have the time to do the full assessments that a physio or I will do, because, you know, they've got a 10-minute clinical appointment in, out. They don't get the time to practice watching dogs move, unless they're specialists. Of course, that's different. If you go to a specialist, you know that they will make you do full assessments of gait and spend more time. But if the vet doesn't think there's anything wrong with a joint, it's unlikely to refer you, or neurologically, it's unlikely to refer you to a specialist, because they just don't have a lot of time. It's very expensive to go to a specialist. It may be that if the vet doesn't, you come and seek the opinion of someone like myself, and then we might say, no, we do think that it's worth going to a specialist before you commit, if the vet's unsure. Technically, we all work together, so the vet, myself, if you go and see a physio or hydro, we're all one veterinary team under the vet, looking, we're called paraprofessionals, which means we work alongside the veterinary industry. Currently, that's, it might change a bit when regulation changes, but currently that's how it stands. So I always need and want consent or referral from the vet before I treat an animal anyway, because We're all about the best health for the animal and not risking it. So it is important to make sure the vet doesn't think there's anything else underlying that needs to be dealt with. So all of those symptoms. And then, of course, if you have a working dog or competing dog, a drop in performance. So, for example, in gun dogs, you know, I've worked with dogs that suddenly just seem to struggle to pick up properly or to hold a bird, or they're chomping because it's less comfortable, or they're dropping it multiple times, or even a dummy if you're just doing training, things like that. Obviously, in agility, they're just dropping time and not knowing why, or adding extra strides to the dog walk and not understanding why that would happen. So that's when the more subtle effects of a body can be seen, because you can see a drop in performance. Dog's not standing square if you're showing them, walk not trotting nicely, changing their gait. That's a really good sign. If you see the dogs, you know, move differently, their gait changes. Some people can really see that, obviously. I've probably gone through plenty at the moment. Suddenly,
there's lots of things. Everyone's going to be staring at their dogs now, watching them and assessing everything, wondering whether they need treatment or not.
You touched one I missed. Sorry, just before I go, because it's a big one, is all of a sudden if your dog just gets a bit reluctant to be touched in certain places, you know, it's always been fine to be groomed, and now all of a sudden it doesn't like it if I groom down its back or groom its tail, or, you know, lift its foot, and it's never been a problem before. Said it's fine. That could be a sign that there's something in the musculoskeletal system that's causing that reluctance and discomfort.
Which is, that's a really valid point to add, because I think that's one of the things that most people will notice first. Because most people, you know, depending on their dog, will groom it every day or once a week, or they'll go to the groomer. So seeing that change is probably a really common one for many people.
Yeah.
You mentioned it a little bit earlier about age.
Yes.
Does the age of a dog matter? You know, is it something that it's more, puppies benefit from it as much as older dogs, adult dogs? Is there benefit to having treatment for any age of your dog, or do puppies not need it, for example?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. It's just like humans. You know, younger dogs will be potentially more susceptible to the little sore things, the aches and pains that happen because they throw themselves around all over and they're a bit uncoordinated and silly. And in fact, one of the girls who I did my degree with did her research in treating puppies that were just born, because of the effects on the effects on the skeletal system of popping out of the birth canal. You know, there's so many factors that act on a body. The younger you start treating a dog, the more likely you are to support longevity. As I say, it's not magic. By itself, it's not going to prevent anything. You've got genetics. Some dogs are predisposed to joint issues. And, you know, some dogs will age quicker, the bigger breeds, different types of breeds. That's not going to change because you get treatment. But you're optimizing how comfortable they are and how long before they do start to succumb to the effects of potentially inevitable. Nothing is ever fully inevitable, but things will happen that you think, well, I couldn't have ever fully prevented that, but it certainly supports it. One of my dogs has a long back. That's just her confirmation. She's very active. She works really hard. She is going to be susceptible to back issues. So I make sure I'm treating her all the time, because I don't want her to suffer pain, arthritis, the likelihood of disc issues. And by keeping everything as strong and stable as possible through treatment, I can help to either prevent or totally delay something like that happening. I've got a dog who's already got disc issues, and I treat him elsewhere. I don't go over the disc, obviously, that you know, we don't risk making things worse, but treating him elsewhere has made a big difference, alongside laser for him. There's loads of things that work together, really complementary. And then if you have an older dog that's never had treatment, it will absolutely help to not completely remove, but help to combat some of the symptoms that they're already potentially getting, in the same way as after an injury, it helps with rehab. So it won't work by itself. You have to have it in combination with medication from the vets, perhaps you're doing hydrotherapy, perhaps you have exercises you have to do as well at home. But in combination with all the treatment, it can absolutely help any dog at any stage. And it's always worthwhile. I think one day, maybe in like 100 years time, we'll all just look after ourselves, our dogs, our animals so much better because we'll know so much more about these things. Mm. But it's fair in the world, really, until I had it for myself and my dog, I wasn't really aware. So I respect that a lot of people are probably like, really?
But then isn't that the same with everything? You know, until you've experienced it in one sort of capacity of life, you don't transfer it into the other.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's the same, you know, with training, with emotions, with behavior of dogs, with everything. I think it's always life experiences that help you learn more, obviously, because we learn every day. But
yeah,
it's fascinating. So you mentioned laser. What's that?
So laser is a type of therapy, again, often used in human physiotherapy as well. And it's essentially a frequency of light that has healing properties. There's a load of research into it. You can get different classes, so different wavelengths penetrate to different depths and help different things. But at its core, essentially, the wavelengths that go into the body tissues stimulate healing even more, and even as a targeted approach to healing. So everything's about, you know, your body has all the tools to heal itself pretty much always, even the same really in human medicine. And what we're trying to do is kind of encourage the body's healing properties to be better. Obviously that's not always the case. There's drugs, there's obviously physical operations. That's not the, but you know, after an operation, the body then heals. Like, mm-hmm. We give it rest, we make sure it's nice and clean, we take away something that's causing a problem, and then you leave the body to it and it stitches, you know, it reheals its skin.
And I suppose it's almost like a domino effect as well. Once you do one thing, it knocks on the next thing and then the next thing and the next thing.
Absolutely. So laser will kind of target an area of inflammation, injury, pain. So you can use it for muscles, you can use it on joints, depending on the type of laser. Different lasers have sort of different niches that they're really good at. You can use a cold light frequency is really good for wound healing. So it encourages, you know, the mechanics of the body that heal a wound to come into that area and work harder. It encourages in things like a joint issue, the parts of the body that reduce inflammation and therefore reduce pain. It encourages where you have muscle damage for the parts of the body that come in and repair that muscle, or repair a tendon or repair a ligament, help it to heal quickly. So laser can be really good as a, you have an injury, this is going to help it fully heal, or it can be really good with you've got an ongoing condition like my dog. I can't heal his disc. His discs have problems. His arthritis exists. But what laser does is it helps that area to be less inflamed and less painful. And I have it done every single month for him. And since we've been having it regularly, his body feels so much better. His movement is so much better. He's still got all of these things. I can't get rid of them, but he is a much happier. Obviously my interpretation of happy, he can't tell me he's happy, but in his own way,
seems
he
more
does.
Comfortable.
He gets grumpy when he's comfortable. He's much more tolerant when he's comfortable.
That says the same for all of us, really, doesn't it? We're all a bit more grumpy if we're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So do you get, obviously, you know, you see a variety of different animals, not only just dogs, but animals as well. Do you treat people for a long period of time, or is it just one treatment fixed? Does it depend on the individual dog or animal?
So I think most people, when they come and they see the benefit, they'll want it to be, I guess, for the lifetime of that dog on a maintenance schedule. If there's no issues, that's what you would do. If there's an issue, you would have potentially more frequent treatments. They would be mixed in with other types of rehab, like exercises, hydro, physio, laser, all of those things, alongside medication. to heal and repair after an injury. And then we would move on to a maintenance schedule. So most of my clients I'm seeing regularly, but regularly depends on their needs, what work the dog's doing, how busy it is. I see an agility, I have a client with agility dogs. She gets her dogs treated every month because it makes a big difference to their performance. She sounds awful just talking about performance. Lovely, lovely lady, cares for her dogs so much. They have the best of everything. But she interprets quite correctly that if they're not performing as well as they can be, then they're a bit sore. Mm. And she doesn't want them to be sore. She has physio, chiropractic and hydrotherapy regularly.
Wow.
Her dogs are incredible athletes. She's trying out for the GP team, so watch this
space. Oh, amazing.
GP team. But then equally, if I had a dog that was no issues currently other than your general day-to-day, they don't do very much, so, you know, they're a pretty placid, gentle dog, then perhaps their maintenance would be every 6 months.
Sure. And so, I suppose that's no different. It's kind of linked to how much of an active, energetic life they have, which is no different to us and like sports, you know, Olympians, for example. They're going to be having treatment all the time because naturally their energy levels are used a lot higher. Just like us, if we have a less active lifestyle, we're going to need probably a little bit less treatment.
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting point to make. I think a lot of people think that if you've got a very, very fit and active dog, they don't need anything because they're fit and active. But then if you compare that to people, the fittest people will have regular treatments to keep them that fit because of what they're doing. So, yeah, so the fitter and more active you are, technically, the more at risk you are. Therefore, keeping your body balanced and you know, preventing injury is almost a higher priority. I think in dogs, it's often, and no criticism, because I was the same. I was like, oh, no, that dog's really fit and active. It's brilliant. Doesn't need anything.
But I suppose the more fit and active you are, they are, the more pressure they're putting under their body. You know, more pressure they're putting their body under. You know, if you've got a dog just mooching around, having a sniff, as you say, going back to the beginning, versus ones that are gung-ho, running, bouncing, then naturally they're putting their body under more pressure. So therefore they're going to need more treatment.
Yeah, for sure. So my little dog that's having all his treatment now, I mean, he's finished work for the season now, but he still runs. He's a Cocker Spaniel. He's a young working Cocker Spaniel. He is very active and he is very gung-ho with his body. And so if I leave him knowing that he's got this imbalance in his muscles and one side is weaker, I am just asking for another injury. So like, no, I would much rather pay for a course of therapy and get him nice and strong and balanced and then keep him that way than pay to deal with the injury, but also deal with the pain and the discomfort and having to keep him quiet and still, etc., that comes with being injured.
And obviously the recovery is going to be higher as well, because you've got the recovery period then as well, rather than the preventative.
Exactly.
Which is no different to many things. No, prevention is always better than cure. We know that across the board for many, many things.
Absolutely. And it is that. It is as simple as that. And just, you know, also on a side note, people understand muscles and they understand, because we have them ourselves, and we understand how having a muscle that's tense or has been twitched, it can really affect everything, even though you can still function. It's the effect it has. And that, as a McTominay Animal Chiropractor, I am still working on muscles. Like, I'm not, people think that chiropractic is, especially because of that pop sound, that crack sound we talked about before. I think a lot of people think chiropractic is literally cranking bones.
Yes.
But, you can't move a bone. Like, you can't move a bone. A bone is within the body. It's very, very protective and very crucial and central to the whole frame of the body. We are not moving bones. We are working on skeletal muscles, spinal muscle, which essentially it's just a specialized form of muscle physiotherapy. So it's not much different to what a physiotherapist would do if they're working on the muscles surrounding the quads or whatever after an issue with a patella. But we're looking at the muscles in the skeletal system, because you have to have a much more specialized adjustment. We call it an adjustment. To get into that muscle, because you can't access it as easily as you can when you're massaging all the other muscles.
Sure.
So essentially it's the muscles in the frame of the body, and that's why it's about balance, because everything comes off that frame. All the other muscles, the rest of, you know, the fascia, the tissue, the nerves, everything, that frame is, you know, a very important part of the body as a whole. Mm. So we're trying to make sure that is fully balanced, and then other stuff is obviously going to be much easier to work with.
Amazing. It's been fascinating learning more about what you do and how it benefits everyone. So if you had one or two kind of top things, top tips or top advice for people to help their dogs a little bit more, to either not need treatment, or if they are noticing discomfort in the dog, what would your two sort of like top tips be?
Okay.
Or top recommendations.
My first top tip, and something that we just don't do enough, is getting your dog to walk. And I don't mean going out for a walk, because a lot of us do that very well. I mean the gait walk, as in not trotting, not running, not bounding around. Because when a dog walks, it has to move all four legs under its own kind of, has to use the muscles in all four legs to make the body move. When it trots, it will only have to use one leg potentially, and it's got a lot of bounce, and the tendons store the energy, so it doesn't have to work the muscles as hard. If you see a wolf pack go over great distances, they're not walking, they're trotting or loping or something, because it's a very energy efficient gait. But you want your dogs, especially as young puppies growing, to use all of their muscles and develop all of their muscles in a nice balance, and not have the imbalances that can then lead to the further issues. So walking, slow walking with your dog is 5 minutes a day. Not obviously when they're pulling to the walk. That's not a good, nice, slow, relaxed walk. So you'll probably have to do it mid-walk or towards the end of the walk when everything's calmed down a bit, and just get them to properly walk and engage all their body nicely in a good balance. So I think that's one thing that we could change. There's lots of other little bits of rehab tips and exercise tips, but I would rather if I ever did that, demonstrate them and show them. But walking, people hopefully can visualize a good walk. And the other thing is to, and this goes hand in hand as well with behavior, is don't overdo it. Like, people seem to think that if you have a dog with a lot of energy, that the best way to deal with it is just to walk it for 4 hours a day and tire it out. But there's a few reasons that's not good. You make it very fit. And if you have an athlete, it will expect the life of an athlete. You
build
its
stamina.
You risk injury, especially in young dogs. Their joints aren't fully developed yet. So their muscles are working really, really hard to support the joints. And if you overwork those muscles and they fatigue, the risk of injury to the joints is high, very high in young dogs that are overexercised. And, you know, most people have heard of the 5 minutes per month rule. And I'm not sure that's always that, you know, that's a general rule. But it summarizes how little really, compared to what we think, especially with young puppies, they need. Puppies, from a behavior point of view, need more sleep. When they get the zoomies and go crazy, you know, it's because they're tired, not because they need more. But
it's easy to be fooled into thinking they need more, because you think, oh, they've got so much energy.
It is 100%. And focusing more when you do have time where you're giving your dog input on asking them to use their brain, not their body, because they could get very fit in their body and still have a poor brain. And then they're still going to be annoying, and they're likely then to do stupid stuff just to find themselves activities to do. And that's when you get some of the crazy stuff that causes the injuries, like rough play or jumping off the back of the sofa, or I don't know. Zoomies are cute and fun, but over excessive zoomies can obviously then put themselves into tricky situations. So the less is more rule. I know everyone has a different take on how they do this, whether they have rest days, whether they just do different things on different days. I don't think you have to do one way or the other. I walk my dogs every day, but it's about, I just don't do that much. I don't do as much as people think. I have, you know, high energy working breeds that are very chilled in general. And people say to me, oh, God, you must walk for like 6 hours a day. I'm like, I absolutely do not.
I haven't got time for that.
Exactly. So yeah, the two things I would say is focus on making them walk daily for good physical development or maintenance of good physicality and muscles. A bit like, you know, just a nice, a bit like doing, it's nothing like yoga, but the same principle of doing a daily yoga pose for humans, just to get everything nice and working. I would say that. And then secondly, yeah, less is more.
Less is definitely more. I fully agree with that. We do have another podcast episode actually all about rest days and the benefits of rest. That's another one that people can listen into. It has been fascinating. I say it's been really good. If people are wanting to know a little bit more about treatment and how to go about it, obviously they can obviously get in touch with you if they're local to your area. So I will pop your details in the show notes that people can find you. But are chiropractors, you know, McTimney across the country? How is the best way to find out who is nearby that they can get in touch with?
Yeah. So nice and easy, although it's not legally required, I think pretty much every McTimney chiropractor is a member of the McTimney Animal Association. Obviously, we're talking about canine chiropractors. There's also the McTimney Council of Chiropractic, I think MCC for humans. Both of those professional bodies on their website list all of the therapists. So I would recommend popping on to either the McTimney Animal Association or the McTimney Council of Chiropractic. Just search human McTimney and it will come up, I'm sure, in a Google. You can see I'm not a human one as well because I don't know that. But definitely the McTimney Animal Association if you're looking for your dogs or horses or any animals. And it will give you a list of therapists and you'll be able to search by your region and find someone that way. And also then you know that every single one of those people are qualified to a very high standard. I think the McTimney Masters is the only chiropractic for animal qualification at that level in this country, at level 7, and level 7 is the same as vets. Obviously we're not in veterinary science, but it's that level. It's a high level. You know that we know our stuff and have had to do lots of practice and observations and exams and la la la.
So you've got that accreditation and knowing what you know what you're doing, which is always good.
So you have the CPD, so you know people haven't just qualified 20 years ago and not learned anymore, and we have to have insurance. So that's all reassuring and a backing for anyone that's looking for a therapist. Like you said at the beginning, or we said, it isn't a regulated industry. So I think as a result, and I'm not saying that people aren't very well-meaning when they set themselves up to try and help, but you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know you don't know it. So
absolutely.
I think there's a lot of people out there that realise the risk that they're putting themselves in, potentially. So I think that it's, and I do the same with training, and I'm sure you recommend the same thing, is finding someone that has had to go and be observed and accredited, have to have insurance to make sure that they're keeping up to date with things, exactly how any regulated industry should be. There's people that do it anyway, even though we don't have to, and I think that's always a good shout.
Definitely. I will pop the links to all of those sort of methods and ways to find people in the description, so that if you do want to, if anyone listening do want to find out somebody in their area, then that will be available. What areas do you cover, Jay?
So I have, I treat out of Potter Paws. So anyone who already knows Debbie and her wonderful training company, and that's in Stoke Mandeville. And I also do treatments in Whittlebury, which is sort of the other side of Bucks, really. I can occasionally do the odd home visit if someone's like desperate, but generally they're where my clinics are. So I feel that most people in Buckinghamshire can get to one or other of those locations. Obviously, if you have a horse, I will come to your yard. But it is really handy if people have horses on the yards together and they all want to have their horses treated, to do it in one go, so that makes it much more feasible for me driving around all over.
Absolutely.
I don't expect come to clinic.
No, it would be a bit of more of a challenge than popping your dog in the car, isn't it?
It would, although it's odd. It is. It does. I did think about this the other day because, you know, people with horses, you can't be taking them. If a farrier said, oh, you have to come to me, they would be like, what? No, that's not how it works. Or a McTimmy or a physio or whatever. But then I see people every week get their horses out just to go and do a lesson somewhere. Not just to, that's obviously vitally important as well. But it is funny, isn't it? What is normal and what we think happens normally. Like you would never expect, I don't think I'd ever expect the vet to come and do a vaccination at my house.
No, no, like, very no, true.
But yeah, so I think it's just as an interesting aside, food for thought, that we are very habitual as humans.
We certainly are, absolutely, in many more ways than one.
So many ways, yeah.
So thank you so much. It has been wonderful talking to you and finding out a little bit more about this wonderful world of chiropractic and treatment for dogs. It's been really lovely having you as a guest. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Debbie. It's been lovely to come here and chat for an hour. It's great.
It's always good to have a good natter. Thank you for listening to The Dynamic Dog Owner with me, Debbie Potter. See you next time.